All right, so this is recording, and I'll just briefly introduce the interview, ask you whether you know, consent to being interviewed, and then I'll just start with the questions.
Okay,
so today is September 23rd, 2008, and we are in Guadalajara, Mexico, at the 15th International Oral History Conference. My name is Alexander Freund, and perhaps you can just state your name.
My name is Tomoyo Nakao, and Tomoyo means phonetically amigo, my friend, and the character with this generation of wisdom. And Nakao is, Naka means center, and O means tail or peripheral, so it's a strange but funny name.
Excellent, great, thank you. The reason we're doing the interview is to find out how oral history has been practiced in Japan. And Tomoyo is, maybe you can just briefly describe your role in the Japanese Oral History Association.
I am now just a member of the Japanese Oral History Association, which has been established, when was that? We are having the seventh or sixth one. I have to be precise here, but 2003, yes. But before that, and I had been a council member since then, but last year I was elected, but I withdrew because I have my parents to take care, and I'm busy enough with Ioha. So I'm a link with Johar and other oral historians and the International Oral History Association. I started Johar Preparation Committee 1999 and 2000 when I invited Dutch archivist called Frida Stylen, who collected the 768 voices of Dutch East Indies, Dutch East Indies. And when I saw him in England, I thought it was the time again to reintroduce oral history and the value of archives to Japan. So I asked my university whether I can invite him, and we did a lecture tour around Japan, about around 8, 9, 10 places. And then some several people joined, and when Robert Parks came, we also gathered about, it was only 9 women, and then we started again our Johar Steering Committee. So basically the history would start from there. But basically, it was there were about 3 years preparation days, which I think I did take a lot of major role. And in 1 year or two, that we did work very hard to organize a huge forum, which was the first conference of the Japanese oral historians, and since then we set up Japan Oral History Association, and we have an annual conference which went successful, and we have about 200 members and more. But we hoped that it will be something like an OHA or IOHA, which is a nice mixture of academics and the practitioner. But I think these days it's getting more and more academic side, and young scholars reading the paper. Hi, excuse me. Current history, and then I'll just go back to the more so to the past history of the Japanese oral history.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
so that's really important,
okay,
as well. Okay, I continue. At that time, Robert Parks came. We also gathered in Amai University and also in Kyoto, because in Kansai area, where we call West Japan, have a lot of citizens groups and people who are doing oral history or life story collection. So we thought it is interesting to have a gathering as well, and it did take place how many? About 10, 12 gatherings had been held, and many people read the papers and knew each other.
And were these national gatherings?
It was not the national one. National one is going to be Johor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty national. And now this one was a more university-based one. But again, same thing happened, that I first picture the vision of gathering of like Iowa, of the really jolly good practitioners and academic discuss and make better and learn how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But by and by, the people rather, I wouldn't say hijack, but then change it into a very academic form where young scholar comes and read a nice paper and then get 2 points or 3 points for his career in future.
Mm-hmm.
And I get rather tired.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this and one person who was in charge of arranging things are going to move to East, so I think I'm going to rearrange it into the Oral History Network West, or Oral History Society West, Oral History Japan West, which is, I'd like to include more media people, and TV media people, and also the lawyers who hear their stories. You know, that they also suffer, they hear, and doctors and also the therapists and people who hear, listen to the stories. And there are lots of civilians and local groups who have done and who are not yet connected. So I'd like to continue
mm-hmm.
to supply the place for the people to understand what oral history means. And they do the oral history without using the term. So what is oral history? What is oral? And why do you have to use oral? Why do you have to use the foreign word? So we just start. Yeah, that. So there are the various stages at the moment in Japan, I think.
So what is the Japanese term for oral history?
There is no word.
No.
Because then we used to say kikitori or kikigaki. Is kiku is hearing and toru is take. So, hearing taking, yeah, or like tape taking.
Mm-hmm.
But then I always argue that you take them; they just talk, and you take them. You are the researcher; they are just an object, the material. And I don't like the idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think oral history is basically a co-work.
A give and take.
Mm-hmm. Well, not really give and take. It's a co-work, work together. And then who asks the question? Also change the quality, so you cannot have a sort of concrete material,
mm-hmm.
you know, to which I think the sociologists tend to believe that there is they are the object of the research, and you have a power
mm-hmm.
to investigate them. So I'd rather use oral history, because history is accepted as a, like piano. We use them, and order is to some extent, so you can imagine. And another word, kōjutsu, Japanese word is kōjutsu. Kō means mouth, so it just is stating.
Mm.
So that is again that cuts off the person who listens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think oral history is easy enough, and we always welcome a new word. So I hope that we can carry on using oral history. I don't mind the word, but then kikitori is something different,
mm-hmm.
I think. Mm.
Can you say a few words about how oral history
mm-hmm.
developed,
mm-hmm.
Maybe not even under that name
mm-hmm.
in Japan, perhaps, you know, whether there are any traditions?
Oh, yes. Actually, there was very big movement in 1980s, late 1970s, like 1980s. Many of the historians started to argue about the oral history. Yes, And historians particularly, and with some anthropologists, tried to do the, they had a symposium and had a conversation with a very famous journalist who collected lots of materials about Japanese war legacies in China. And another person who also writes as a novel about the Japanese war memories. So that was the time when oral history has been introduced to the people, and which became very had a moment to be popular, but then older generation didn't like the word, or they didn't like, they thought our way is okay. And the thing was, they didn't record, and the new people are trying to record, to use the recording voice. I think that stimulated them, you see.
Right. Yeah.
That is my feeling. The older journalists who use the notes, kikigaki is just writing what you hear, and also examine and question and sometimes even torture until they confess that they had been hiding, because that's the way they hid it. He's still very famous journalist.
And what's his name again?
Honda Katsuichi was his. He's the person who first started to, far before Iris Chan, started to examine that Japan, what Japan did to the Chinese. So that was the time, 1980s, and somehow it, I wouldn't say died away, but somehow they sort of were, they went into history, track of the history, track of the sociology, and they just didn't gather as oral history again. So people kept doing that, but the sociologists would call it life story.
Mm-hmm.
Some psychologists call it life story, and they didn't have an umbrella word.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been reintroduced. I would say I rekindled the fire of the oral history.
Is there a tradition in Japan going back further to not necessarily record, but to testify?
Yeah. Well, not necessarily testify, but ethnology in Japan was very strong, very, very interesting area. And also the economy who investigate the what we call Noson, is that the farmer's culture. They usually go around to interview the people, because they have no written, well, they have written things around, but then it was necessary to interview them. So the Noson, the farmer economist, and also the ethnologist and ethnographist, they all had a very rich tradition of going and interviewing, and economists try to hold the structure of the society, of course, and with the ethnographer or ethnology people just record the very interesting stories, you know, remained as a narrative, like a long time ago there was a man who called da 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 da, that kind of old story. And there was a very interesting story in one area, so his methodology became he became a founder of ethnography in Japan, I think. Ethnomethodology, yes, and that is still very strong, and they are not quite sure whether they should record or not, because recording a machine is a machine, so it might, people become tense. Also, there was another 1960 already, there was a project from the more political side. In 1960 there was a project called the Crash Between the Different Culture, which was a project to interview the Japanese soldiers, and the transcription was made. And at that time, the lady who helped that was telling that it was so heavy,
tape recorder.
Tape recorder, yes, and it's a real tape recorder.
Real to real.
Yeah, not a small tape recorder, but it's a real, and it is so heavy, and you have to carry them, and deal with them very carefully. And after interviewing everything, they hand you a book and read this. She was very disappointed, but at the same time, it is a very valuable material. But I found them out in the corner of a very small room of the Tokyo University Library. Nobody tries to rescue the material. Once the transcription made, they are all forgotten. Yes. And, well, that was the same with the Nagasaki testimony group. They tape the recorder and they transcribe and they make up, they write this into a story form and they erase the tape. Oh. There was no idea to give value to the voice itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that is new to us.
I also heard that after the Second World War,
mm-hmm.
a lot of newspapers
mm-hmm.
would publish
mm-hmm.
Japanese people's experiences,
mm-hmm.
What they said, sort of
mm-hmm.
the raw oral history material,
mm-hmm.
publish transcripts in
mm-hmm.
newspapers.
Yeah, well, they still do. They carry on doing. The newspaper journalists are the top people who tried to gather and correct the material. But again, they don't tape them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have this ability, of course, as a journalist, you know, what we call kikigaki, and listen and write, and summarize in their own term.
So those are summaries often?
You cannot remember the people's words unless you write down word by word. And these days, people, they use the small recorder, so sometimes they do, but still I think they stick to the old method. But it doesn't deny the value that they did. And also the investigation for the atomic bomb survivors, it started late 1960s or 70s. It's pretty late because the Americans were rather suppressing of the exhaustive research.
Mm.
And apart from that, the women local group were very active all the time here and there. They also formed up a national group, and the local women group tried to interview another local women. They had a pretty good budget from local government, so they also have the good material and resource. Only the problem again is there's no place for the tapes to be stored.
Hmm.
We are more or less, I would say, the written material-based society, and less people believe in the words, and unless it's been transcribed and edited and printed out. Younger generation would be different because they know the TVs and they know the power of the picture. So another thing that I have to point out is that in 1978, at that time that the Essex people who learned at Essex Paul Thompson came back, and also we were working together to rekindle this fire, partly because there was Mr. Professor Mikuria, and they set up a institute to interview the political official figure, which itself is a good thing. Only the problem is that they tried to define the word oral history is like this. Oral history means that it is done by the professionals for the ordinary people to interview the official figure, i.e. the official in this sense is sort of governors or politicians, rich people or company manager, such as an example. what? They tried to put it rather not mildly, hijack the word, because you can do it in an insular like Japan. Life story is a sociology, life story taking.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to use oral history for the interviewing the public figure. And of course the people who knew the story and the history of oral history said, excuse me, please don't do that. That we should include the oral history of public figures nicely put in the our whole collections, but not use the oral history only for the public figure. It is wrong, it's just not right, and it would be only in Japan. So
was this at one specific university?
Hmm?
At one university?
That was they put up an institute for Seisaku Daigakuin, the policy making institute for the investigation of policy making.
Okay.
Yeah, and one or two might come. They still do. They interview the people. They have a lot of budget to interview the politicians, the governors, but they interview only the people in the power.
Mm.
They don't interview, for example, the socialist or the communist.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite funny to see their work.
Yeah.
I don't know how it goes, and that's the reason why, I'm sorry, but I think that's the reason why they can get more budget. It's a successful story, yes. In general, the weakness of Japanese oral history so far was that there is a result and you just collect the materials to prove. So for example, Honda Katsuichi knew that Japan did a very bad things in China, so they investigate and they collected the testimonies
mm-hmm.
Of the people who did the negative thing and squeeze them up to tell the truth. And
so you mean war crimes?
Yeah, war crimes was one thing, and but also the when you think of this and the group that the result is there. It's a success of our one party.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, success story of one party, and not the failure part. I would imagine. And then you collect the story to fit their already sort of formed up narratives.
Mm.
And that is again different from what we do as an oral history, to see as it is and then gather them, and then you see a new maybe fact or truth or reality. Another stimulation in Japanese oral history was again came from the war, because it was 1990s that here I put the indented comma, the comfort women issue came up, and they asked whether they can have at least recognition and compensation.
Mm-hmm.
Now there is no record of these people. So the historians did very, very worked so hard to find the diary of the military doctors, because they investigate once a week.
Mm.
Yeah, so it is like the third sector job. It wasn't really, it doesn't belong to either side, which was a problem. But anyway,
to either side of what?
It's not completely military
mm-hmm.
section. But either it is not completely private section either. What we call it the third sector, you just sort of rely on each other
mm-hmm.
to work. So, but anyway, these women's voice must be heard, recorded, recognized, and also put into the court case. So usually they come and visit in Japan and give the testimonies in front of many people. So it was always a sort of testimony testing. And so there's a huge right-wing people say, or her memory is wobbling. She said a different thing before, and they tried to poke where the weak points of the memories. And some would argue that it's only a memory and their memory changed, so you cannot rely on them.
Mm-hmm.
One of my colleagues did a very good research, visited China often, and it's true that they don't remember the date, but they remember where the moon was and in what shape. That's how the farmers count the calendar. But that kind of thing sharpened up in one sense, being about the testimony making and also the how to prove in the history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that fact and the discussion of fact and reality and truth were very, very hard in Japan. So in one sense we have a very powerful argument about the how to do the cross-examination or how not to, and what comes only from oral testimonies, or should we cross-check with the other materials. That is very, I think, probably more discussed in Japan rather than in other countries.
Okay.
Yeah. The voice there, yeah.
It seems that many of the projects, oral history projects in Japan are about the Second World War. Hiroshima, the comfort women, the atrocities and crimes, the experiences of individual Japanese people. Have there been other topics, issues, questions that Japanese oral historians...
Women's history and farmers' history are definitely there. And also the minorities and migrations, but again, migrated during the war and came back. Yeah, we were a bit more strict. The reason why I'd like to introduce more of the journalists and other people is that I do believe that oral history is also very rich. Rich thing. I do want to know, for example, the pre-war artists, pre-war actresses, their histories and why they want to be an actress, what did their grandma said when she was a film star, and that kind of thing. That the life stories of a shoemaker, life story of a housemaker, life stories of singers, opera singers, first person who went to did the PhD in the United States. I really want to hear their stories as well. But unfortunately, we still haven't got that kind of rich life story collections. But again, there are lots of written materials. We don't have but the life story of the comedian, for example.
Right.
Why they wanted to be a comedian, what was the most interesting and most hard thing for them. There are various interviews in the magazines, but then we don't have the such collections as Rob has in the British library. Again, there is something, I think, in our religion or behavior that let it go, then put it in the water, it will go back into the sea. And then we don't believe, we are not in a stone culture. Solid.
Yeah,
so we now realize that we are losing a lot because we didn't record the pre-military day culture. 100 years old lady who died the other day translated lots of children's stories, Winnie the Pooh and so on. I really wanted to interview her. I really wanted to, because that generation is the pre-military people are much more interesting people and open-minded and international as well. But for that aspect, that we have more room too for the life stories, and we have to probably invite some people again to see the variety of your history.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned the UK a couple of times now, and it seems to have been an important international influence on how oral history is done in Japan. Have there been other international influences? And I'm thinking here especially of Singapore, which has pretty extensive oral history collection that is organized by the National archives.
Singapore. Yeah, funny enough, because that our invasion to Singapore, and also the geographical position that Singapore do not influence us very much from that aspect. Of course, that I did go, and many people uses them. When Paul Thompson came, that I also did a research of the Singapore Oral History Archive and Malaysian. They have a Malaysian one, and did a report. And there's another lady who wrote a paper on the material. But if you say that do they influence us, is no. I think there, Japan still has a bit of a strange idea that an influence should go from Japan to them and not vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Europeans think that the European influence goes to Asia and not really very vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know why, but basically the Singapore Oral History Archive is there, but and we did after we set up Johor, that we did introduce a lot from them as well, but that system is not actually coming yet.
Mm-hmm.
And but even if it comes, I think that we have to do quite a different way. We don't have a kind of set up library like UK library or Singapore archive. We don't have that national place to deal with it. So
right.
That's the first place.
Yeah.
That's why it starts from individual. And when one person, one institute tries to do that, they try to hijack the world. No way. It's difficult. But there are lots of small, short interviews written in a written form, and journalists write a lot of them. So I think, as I said again, that the people rather enjoy reading them rather than hearing the story. Though the radio program has a lot of interesting interview programs. So,
and I would imagine that the web now is going to play a more important role.
Yeah, well,
but maybe that's something, because we're running out of time, and maybe during the conference we can continue the interview because we've still got more questions.
Yeah, I will try to think to supply the other the rest
sure.
of the there are various stories, and I have to think of the other sort of the end.
So then,
thank you.
We've done the history, and we can sort of look at the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to thank you for now, Tomoyo, and we'll continue this tomorrow or in a couple of days.
Yeah. And I'll try to think of the other things as well. I'm sure I missed something.
All right, excellent. It's recording. So we're back with Tomoyo.
Mm-hmm.
But today is the 26th of September, the last day of the 15th International Oral History Conference in Guadalajara, Mexico. And I got two questions left to ask. And the first one is, who in Japan is doing oral history? Is it only academic historians, or is it others? Maybe you can just sort of give some examples.
Citizens, groups, women, and academics, and how can I say? We didn't use the term oral history in the past. We said, as I said before, kikitori or kikigaki, and which is taking notes of the other people's stories or narratives, or writing down or listening to it. So the term, when you say, are you mentioning typically the oral history as a term, or saying these kind of storytelling and story taking in general?
The general practices.
Okay, I think that it started in, of course, as a, we have a lot of medias from either period.
Mm-hmm.
And the first novelist women were actually writing the gossips of those noble world. And so it's all sort of very long in our history to hear the stories and make it summarized as a perhaps a very long novel or serial stories and so on. And we know that there are people who actually existed.
Mm-hmm.
You can now compare the real history and also the written, all these fictionalized ones. But that means women listen particularly and write. Also, men started writing. This is 11th century, okay? Yes, and the men faked that as if women are writing diaries. So they also write what others said to me, and because men, it was an sort of an female thing to write down your own thoughts or other people said. You know, that the men should write philosophy and so on, and so that men started to faking women's name to write their diaries and records how sad he was and when he lost a child. So through that kind of diary, we are very familiar to the accounts of the people and have an interest what is going on in other people's minds. But I think an other tradition is that we rather make it shorter, like haiku or tanka. Have you heard this shortened form of the poetry?
No.
It's a very shortened form of the poetry. So in three lines or in just five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. Like an I cannot do them. But anyway, the and there is a humorous thing as well. So one tradition went into the poetry and make it rather short and don't speak too long a thing. And it is particularly for the samurai people, the warrior's culture, that you just say one word at the end of your life and that is enough. So even until now, there's a CM saying that otoko wa damatte sapporo beer means men do not talk a word, just drink beer. So particularly for men, it was difficult to tell their emotions and sufferings and so on. But of course, the media in the 18th century, 17th century, there was a kind of media newspapers every day, so they hear the stories and write about it, and sometimes they play reenact the what happened over the day. So it was a kind of oral thing as well. I think the journalists of the our media and the papers in 1910s, 20s, and 30s, and during the even the war, are a kind of oral historian, though that they are only male, and it had to be written at the end, and you cannot record. They don't have this kind of nice machine that you are recording my voice. Therefore, though there are oral traditions, somehow until it is very written and printed in the form, people were rather slow to believe what other people say. Strangely enough, in my view, that there is a disbelief in words in Japan.
In spoken words. But not in written words.
True. In written words, somehow you put your not a sign but your real hanko in red.
Yes,
it's of your own family. You have to make it very special to be only yours.
Okay.
It's still in the bank that it is. You need this special stamp that this is hereby. I can swear that I told the truth.
Mm. And we've already talked how oral history has developed more recently.
Yes.
So now I want to just finish by asking how you think oral history may develop in the future. Where do you see the major issues, the
if
major
I can
problems?
Oh, it will. You know that we are coming back to the spoken culture again. But after we are rather fed up with the media and TV and radio. Well, radio is okay, but we are very fed up with this sensational TVs and programs and so on. So TV presenters are also going back to taking testimonies and also the witness. And citizens group who started, as I said, 1950s and 60s, students activists also started taking the stories. But the negative side of the Japanese imperial sort of bad things. So it's always there is a war somehow. Or war intervened in a spoken culture, shall I say. I think that's the right way to view it. But it revived our sort of interest in the spoken word and recording. And because of the development of this and Sony or the other sort of the
digital technologies.
Digital we still
or recording technologies.
Yeah, recording technologies made it more vivid, and students or young people now realize when they listen to it that how it is different from these written and printed stories. It's very exciting, and it is even different from the TVs which already edited. We are rather late for the media literacy. In Canada it's so advanced, so we actually used a lot of media literacy to let them notice that it's been edited. So the media literacy going with this testimony taking is now, I think, going to flourish, and the world oral history is now used more often. And of course that we are the people who are in nonsense activists to make to regain the real sense of the world oral history, because as I said, there was a person who tried to make it as a, just to interview the public figure. So we just have our word back. And just as a last example, that before I came there was an Okinawan people that there's a court case whether there was an order to kill the Okinawa citizens before the American invasion, because they thought they would be raped and they would be prisoners and forced laborers and slavery labor. Therefore that then one very sort of Nobel Prize professor wrote the that there was an order. And other historians said there wasn't, at least as long as he read, there wasn't an order. Now there are sort of, so now there is a court case going on because two Japanese officers are saying that it didn't happen. We ordered not to kill yourself. They say that. And then, so the historian, oral historians, or historians who came back to oral historians are now stressing so much that the value of the, what people speak and what they witnessed. So therefore, I think there is a future, but then if we are be careful enough not to be categorized again yet to sociology or logy of any logy. Yeah, because of the slim number of the children and also the slim budget for the academics, that it is easier and safer to remain as a very old discipline.
It's a traditional approach to history.
Yes. Yeah, philosophy, literature, anthropology, not oral history. What is that? Is it what's convention? What is it? Is it a literature or what? They And then, if you want to make it academicize it, it will be rather go off from the citizens. So I found that oral history, the future is there, but it is very important not to. Well, in one sense, we have to sophisticate it, or also tell the way how to do it, but to see the value of our last resources is also important. But it takes time for them to create a budget. So that's one of the reasons why it is not done still doing, and citizens, some of the citizens these days, just a couple of these days, that then they first realized, oh, what we had been doing is oral history. Oral history. So I hope that International Oral History Association too can, give any more of an ideas. Otherwise, as I said before, we are not alphabet culture. So in one sense, you are doing a very cruel thing to the other lettered cultures, because they are either they are far away, or either they do not speak in these two languages.
In English and Spanish.
Oh, the German is similar, and French you can understand, and they are all cousin languages.
Yeah.
But if you see the Burmese and Thais, their written words for us, even that it's just so complicating, and no Iranian, no Arabic here, no Persian language here. You know that you are excluding whole sorts of these narrating cultures, like Arabic, Arabian Nights, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So I was very sad when this Iranian person applied in a very bad English, though his idea was really good. I could detect because the grammar system was similar. But it will be a very awful English.
Yeah.
So. You see, but you also have to find an English-speaking person to correct it,
mm-hmm.
which is not even easy.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I said 2 years ago, my job was just to cause a bit of a noise that there are various, more different narrations, narratives and languages and people who might talk and talk and talk and be recorded and recorded and recorded if only one understands this variety.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's wonderful that you have this capacity more than others. So
all
here's
right.
my word.
Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that our readers will get a lot out of the interview. So
yeah, let me cross the as I said, I just add that I was a bit. You saw that I was a bit, and he was also that annoyed by. My comments and his comments. And Japan or any, I think particularly Japan or defeated country, only Japan is so much represented by English written resources, which for us that reading English just makes us headache. Really makes us headache. German is better in reading, to be honest, because it is much more logical.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Yeah.
Be there then be. It's we loved it there system then, and we loved it because it's so logical.
Mm.
But then this illogical, soft English reading, all these with jargons, are just sort of waste your life sometimes.
Mm.
And that, but just oral history world is also still through these languages of the only sort of selected languages. That we can represent ourselves.
Hmm.
So I hope that will change. I don't know how, because we don't go for the Tower of the Babel.
Yeah.
And it takes whole lots of time to learn to read and speak and listen to another language. It takes half a life,
mm-hmm.
really.
Yeah.
But it's only that first starting point is that for the your privileged position people to understand these varieties and great resources around, and that will, I'm sure, will better the world and for the world peace, to be honest, that is my still the purpose of oral history.
Great, thank you, that's a wonderful closing remark.